Everyone, this is George Kroos, and welcome back to another monthly edition of the Best of the Innovator's Mindset podcast for the month of March 2024. And what I wanted to do this month, before we get to the amazing guests that I've had and some of their brilliant insights, is just share a little bit from my recent newsletter, because I know it's a time right now where people are actually looking for maybe a new job, whether it's in education, whether it's outside of education. So I actually just wrote a short email newsletter. You can actually see the newsletter in the description down below, or you can subscribe to it. And every Saturday I do three things email. So I just share three kind of random thoughts that have to do with education, have to do with life, have to do with leadership. But I wanted to share this with you all because I know how hard it was to find a new job and how hard it was sometimes to be in a job that I hated. And I'll talk more about that in a second. But just for the people out there, and whether you're actually looking for a job or you're someone who hires people, I think this is going to be helpful to you. And maybe not right now, because maybe you love what you do. And if you love what you do, that's awesome. But for those who are looking, this might be helpful. So I just want to share this with you really quick. Some of the insights that I shared in this week's newsletter is just to kind of recap and hopefully help someone out there. And so the three tips I have, the first one I'm going to talk about real quick is create a application that is aligned with the job or career you want, not the one you currently have. And what I wanted to share about that, when I was applying for a leadership position, when I was in the role of a teacher, my mentor, Kelly Wilkins, who I absolutely love, who is basically the inspiration for my new book that's coming out very soon called What Makes a Great Principal, because she was an incredible principal and she totally not only changed my career, but my life. She really encouraged me to apply for a leadership position. I hope she liked me, and that's why, not because she wanted to get rid of me, but she gave me that advice about like aligning the resume or the cover letter to the job you're aspiring to actually be a part of. And so that insight, basically where I was at the time, Alberta, Canada, they had what was called the Alberta Leadership Standard. Now, they also had what's called the Alberta Teaching Quality Standard. And so there was like 11 or 13 or whatever standards that teachers were expected to meet. But I was currently a teacher and I wanted to go into leadership. So she made me look up those leadership standards. And basically, I think there was at the time five or seven standards. It's one or the other. And I looked at those standards and she said, basically what you want to do is show how you're meeting those standards right now in the role of a teacher. And the thing that I've always suggested is that leadership is not a position that's given to you. It's basically a viewpoint others have that you've earned based on how you model, what you actually do. There's a difference between a leader and an administrator. Some of the best teachers are incredible leaders and some administrators are terrible leaders. So basically, when I created the resume, went through it, I looked at those leadership standards and I basically said, I'm already meeting your standards from the role of a teacher. And so why that's so important is basically you are telling people you are totally a sure thing. And I think that was what Kelly was getting to me and it really helped me. It's always advice that I pass on to others. The second one is research where you want to go and highlight their work and how it aligns with yours. I still do this. You know, people ask me to join them for events, to come speak to their groups. And typically what I do is I look up, you know, what their vision and their mission is. And I look at their strategic plans, all that other stuff. And then I kind of think about like, how would I actually help benefit them? And the thing that I think is really important for me is I don't want to just go into a place and I do my thing, they do their thing, because that's just totally disjointed. What I really want to do is to kind of highlight what they're doing and bring out the best and help further the mission of the organization. And it's the same thing when you're applying for a job. What are the skills and talents that you have that would actually really kind of bring out where that school, that organization, that business, where they're trying to go? And so I think that's a really powerful way to kind of let people know that you're actually interested in this in a way that you went and did some research, connected, but you're also aligning your standards, because you might go, like, I'll be honest with you, I've looked at some places, I'm like, you know what, this is what I'm doing right now and what they're trying to achieve. I don't think I'm the person for them. But I think what's powerful is that I would say to them, hey, I don't think I'm the right person, but I do know someone who's great at this work. and sharing that. And I will tell you, I know that sounds like, wow, why would you give that opportunity up? When I actually suggest people, because I don't think I'm the best fit, that always comes back to benefit me, whether it's the person I suggested or the organization that says like, hey, this guy's not just messing around. And I think that's a really important thing, because sometimes when you do research, you might find that, oh, maybe I'm not the best person, or honestly, maybe I don't want to be here. This is maybe not where I want to be. And so I think doing that research and then finding, you know, what you're really good at aligning, it can be really, really powerful. And so the last one that I shared in this newsletter, and then, by the way, the newsletter is going to be a little bit different when I'm sharing, because I'm not reading, I'm just reading the points and kind of just going off the top of my head. So the first one, the third one is focus on a few of your strengths and try to relate them to how they would benefit the new role organization. What I mean by this is, what are you really good at? What are you aiming to do? So in the second point, I talked about like researching the organization, where they want to go. But this is more about, who are you? Like, do you know you? And what I wanted to kind of suggest to people when they're doing this, what is the thing you're really good at? And how do you keep kind of bringing it back to that answer, right? How do you kind of keep making sure that people see your strengths, what you will bring to this organization? Because when we have those kind of rapid fire conversations, you might not know the questions. And I think that's a terrible interview process. I remember when I got interviewed, I was actually given a list of things that they were kind of looking at and gave me some time to think about it and said like, hey, highlight, you know, 5 points that you want to do and let me just kind of talk. It was really an interesting process. But when you don't know the questions, when you are kind of, you know, being sidetracked, which again, terrible interview process in the sense that when do we actually just like surprise people with questions? We give them time to prepare, give them time to think, but not in the interview. We just like, surprise, not a good process. So the reason that, you know, we don't necessarily know those questions, why you should research yourself, is kind of have in the back of your head, like, what do I want to make sure that I highlight? Maybe they don't ask the certain questions that I'm expecting. But even if they don't, can I come back to this? Now, I think this is really important. Politicians do this, and it drives me bonkers. Yeah, I said bonkers. That's right. It drives me bonkers in the sense that they sometimes are asked questions, and then they just say what they want to say, and they totally disregard the question. I'm not telling you to do that. What I am saying to you is to think about, what are your strengths? And think of the question. Take some time. Take like a moment. When you get the question, you don't have to spit, you know, answers right away. Just think about this and think about, why does this matter? Like, think about, what's my strength? How do I tie it into this? And then just kind of take a second. Make sure you answer the question, but also don't forget to highlight yourself. And if you feel you're bragging, that's the point. It's an interview. You're applying for a job. You don't say, oh, I'd really suck. That's probably not a good process. Think about the things you're really good at and make sure you tie it back to that. So I want to share those. I want to share those ideas with you, but I also just want to give you like 1 or 2 minutes just to talk about, you know, if you're thinking about applying for a job. So I'm going to talk about that in 1 second. Here's something to consider. You don't have to love what you do, but what you do shouldn't make you miserable. That's something that's really important to me. And I don't think that everyone has to find a passion in their career. It's such a blessing. I love what I do. I really do. And I know what a blessing it is. But some people, their job is not that important to them. It's a way to, you know, have a life that they want outside of their career. And that's totally fine. And so that's why I really think that you honestly don't have to love what you do. It's great if you do. But I do know it. What you do should not make you miserable. And this is why I shared 3 tips on getting a new job. It wasn't because I was just thinking about people who are currently applying, but people that feel a little stuck and maybe pushing them to think, hey, maybe I should leave. And it's interesting because a lot of people feel so much guilt about leaving their organizations or leaving their schools, but they don't necessarily feel guilt about what they're losing in themselves or their mood and how it affects others when they come home from a job that they despise and from a place that they're not really happy. And I'm not saying the place is wrong or thing. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe it's just not a good fit. And that guilt at, oh, like if we leave, what will happen? And I remember seeing this tweet and I don't know where it came from. I just want you to know it's not mine. But somebody posted like Nick Saban, and whether you like him or not, he was the head coach of Alabama. He's probably considered one of the best, if not the best, college coaches of all time. And he recently retired. Within basically a day and a half, they replaced him. They got someone new right away. And we feel like, what will this place do? Every organization has moved on from people and they get new people. And so don't worry so much about what that will do to your organization if it's hurting yourself, if it's hurting your friends, if it's hurting your family by what you're actually doing there. Being open to a change is really important, because honestly, life is way too short to be at a place where you don't feel valued. Not that you aren't valued, maybe you are, but if you don't feel it, then it doesn't really matter. And when you find that new job, and this is something that I've really embraced, every new opportunity is a way to create a better version of yourself. Like I said earlier, you don't have to love what you do, but what you do should make you miserable. So if you feel miserable, maybe this is a sign that maybe you should start looking for something new. It's not always the worst thing. And I'll tell you from personal experience, it made all the difference in my life. So I want to share that with you. I hope that it helped you in some way. And if it didn't, maybe it can help someone you know. So please consider sharing this. But even if this wasn't good advice, I promise you, you will hear some great advice from amazing guests from this past month on the Innovators Mindset podcast. Well, this is the big topic in, I don't want to say education, I want to say the world, because it is artificial intelligence. I'm watching, I was just actually right before I talked to you, I was watching, I can't remember his name, but he's so, it's maybe Marcus Brownlee. I can't remember his name, but he is like, he's a YouTuber that talks about tech trends, and I've seen it before, but like to hear what he has to say about it, yeah, was how basically you can make like stock footage your own. There's the new thing from OpenAI, where they're basically, you can just say, make this scene, and it's totally human. And if you look for it, you can actually see it's not real. But like, mm-hmm. if you weren't looking for it, you wouldn't know.
Right.
So what do you see kind of like in this time where we have all this stuff with artificial intelligence? And the thing he kept saying over and over, over again is that, and I've said this too, this is the worst it's going to be from this day forward. It only gets better. So like, right. How do you kind of get people focusing on the stuff that's coming with artificial intelligence, the stuff that's already here, but also focus on ensuring kids have the ability to create?
Yes. I do think that it is, like you're saying, it's such a huge topic right now. I actually did present at ISTE last summer and at FETC and at GAETC about AI and using it for creative purposes. And I'm doing another one this summer at ISTE, just a little plug. If anybody's going to be there, you definitely could come. But it's more for our younger students and how AI, I feel like, should be introduced to them. With me, I've done it with third, fourth, and fifth grade, and I've used Adobe Express. And I really used it as a way to talk to them about it, because on the first day before we had done anything with it, and I had honestly not even mentioned it before that day, even though months before I was planning for a presentation, I just said, you know, hey, I'm just curious. Let's just have a discussion in the room. Raise your hand if you know about AI. Every hand went up. And I said, okay, let's just talk about, what do you know? Like, what do you think it is? What are you positive that it is? What are you unsure that it is? And we just had this great discussion, and it was really just cool. Like, I loved it. I felt like it was a great time for me to connect with my students. And then we went on to look at a very simple project. We basically asked the AI inside of Adobe Express to create a like a character, but it was like a mashup of two other things. So like, you would say, I would like a unicorn and a cow, right, and see what it came out with. And then we would add in other adjectives, you know, that is singing and has headphones on and has pink hair or whatever. So it was really fun. The kids had a great time. But when I showed them the demonstration, I put in something, and when it popped up, I would say, now friends, I know that AI is, you know, some of y'all said, like, it's the smartest thing in the whole wide world. And I said, and I see what you're talking about. I said, but your brain as a human and as a student is always going to be able to decipher and understand things more than the AI. And I would say, because a lot of times I ask the kids before I'm typing in what we want, and somebody said, it's like a name of a dance, like, oh, I knew it, Gritty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's like a name of a dance. They said like the unicorn cow doing the Gritty. And I was like, okay, so let's talk about this before I push enter. Is AI as a computer going to understand what the Gritty is? I said, because for me, I knew because y'all talk about that kind of stuff, but my mom, who's 83, would not know what the Gritty is. And I said, so, or my dad rather, either one of them. And I said, you know, they would think like sandpaper, like it's gritty.
Right.
I said, so what's AI going to think? And so having us be able to talk about those things in their mind, they were like, oh, I get it. Like I have to say something like doing a dance, or like, you can't use these words that are just, you know, words that.
Did it know? I gotta know. Did it know what the
it
gritty
did not. It did not. It
oh,
did
wow.
not know what the gritty was. And we then have tried other things to see, like, you know, and I say to them, I'm like, just try it out and see if it'll know. I don't know. I'm guessing that it will not. But you know, that was a great learning time. And I felt like with students, if we don't talk about it and we just try to push it under the rug, they're gonna go find out on their own.
Right.
I would rather, as an educator, have them find out the educational way to use it correctly than just to go and start just having it write all their papers for them, instead of teaching them to write their paper and then maybe take sections and put it in or proofread it that way. So we've had a lot of discussion before we ever started using it. And I will also say that my students, I would also say, when it would come back with the picture, sometimes because it's just grabbing images from the internet and smushing them together, it would be, you know, their unicorn cow would have 8 legs or some random, like 7 legs, you know, some random number. And I would always say, you know, if that's what you're looking for, then okay. But typically that's probably not what you're looking for.
Right.
And so it'd give them the chance to really look at what was being brought up with just pictures and being able to decide, okay, is that what I had in my head before I put it in there? Is that what I was kind of looking for? And if not, going back and putting in more words or changing their prompt, so to speak. So I really loved all of those aspects with using it with my students.
How could this actually improve learning in schools? Like, how do you see that as being beneficial?
Unleashes the individual power that each of us has. And what I mean by that is, it is easy to get into a school district, get into a field and become part of groupthink. And, you know, and you're like, this is how things have always been done. You know, I'm just doing this. I'm going with the flow. I'm not here to rock the boat, or not even think that it can be done any differently, any better. And when you become an entrepreneur and you are sharing your ideas to a bigger audience and you are, you know, you're tapping into your creativity, you're risk taking, you're thinking about solutions, that fuels you, that changes your mindset, right? And with that change in mindset comes a new way of thinking, a new way of doing, where you are not limited or constrained by that group thing. You're not inside that box. You're not beholden to old ideas and old ways of doing, but you're really thinking about, how can I do this differently? How can I do this better? And so when you have that mindset, you can then bring that back into your classroom and figure out different ways. How do I engage my kids differently? How do I take these tools and use these in different ways to reimagine what I'm doing in my classroom? If you're leading teachers, how can I tap into their strengths so that they themselves, right, are thinking out the box, and they're no longer afraid to make a mistake. They're no longer afraid to think differently, to be creative, to put themselves out there. And so this is where I think having that entrepreneurial mindset really comes into play, to where teachers are free, right? It frees them from thinking, I have to do it this way, but you don't. right? You create your own avenues, your own lanes. You can do all of these things that will allow you to be a better person.
One of the things we talked about, and full disclosure, I was asking you, like, hey, what are you interested in? What do you like talking about? And you said, the idea of, you know, being professionally irreverent. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And so, just like my teach my 7-year-old daughter Clea, I was like, what does irreverent mean? So I just did, I actually thought you were gonna say professionally irrelevant. I was like, I know what irrelevant means. And so I like Googled it and I was like, well, irreverent kind of means disrespectful, like can be a little bit disrespectful. And you're like, no, it's professional. There's a difference here when I talk about professionally. So first of all, I think it, one of the things that's really important, I think when we say buzzwords in education, I believe words become buzzwords when we say them without actually like articulating what they clearly mean, right? And sometimes people just say words over and over and over again because they think it's the word they should be saying. But then if you say to them, what does that even mean? And then you, and they can't tell you, that's when it becomes a buzzword. So I just asked you, and I loved what you shared. So talk a little bit about what it means to be professionally irreverent and why it's so important. I actually, in full disclosure, asked Sarah, I loved it so much. I'm going to ask her some questions and hopefully I get to post on my blog sooner than later, because I just think it's what you shared is so connected to innovation. And I will say this, I'm like, I do that. I do what you said, but I've never actually had the term for it. And it really made a lot of sense to me. So if you can just share professionally irreverent, sure, why that really matters.
Yeah, I mean, I think let me start by saying what it isn't, right? So it's not about saying anything you want. It's not about being disagreeable. It's not about pushing back for the sake of pushing or being critical. So being professionally irreverent is being deliberate about not just going along to go along. And so there's sort of three things that to me characterize being professionally irreverent. One is asking a lot of questions, right? Because I'm the kind of person, it needs to make sense for me to sort of get on board. And so it's being comfortable to ask questions about why certain choices are being made or why certain decisions, and have we thought about this and have we thought about that? And so creating a space where we can question decisions, approaches, all of those things to me is number one. And I think if you're in a room where people aren't asking questions, that to me is worrisome. So I really think you have to be in a space where you push into this space of asking questions. The second thing I would say is it's a posture of always trying to make things better. So it's sort of almost a compulsion of mine that I can't ever leave something alone. If I touch it, I have to try to improve it.
Right.
And so to me, being a professionally irreverent is pausing to say, does this still work? Pausing to say, is this approach, does this serve our goal? I love, one of the people who work with me know I'm always saying is, what is the problem we are trying to solve? Yeah. Is this the approach that does it? So the second thing is really also trying to improve. And the third thing I think about being irreverent is figuring out what the people in positions of authority and whatever you that means for you, whether it's supervisory authority or hierarchy or whatever it is, like figuring out what motivates them and approaching issues from their interest base, right? So if you're someone who says, oh, I can't do all these things with my boss, or my organization doesn't have a tolerance for this, I'd say, well, what is it that they're after? Because if they're motivated by excellence, they're motivated by innovation, if they're motivated by accolades, then you have to figure out a way to sort of be irreverent in a professional way, right, to show them how doing something maybe just a little bit differently or asking these questions might get at what they're really after ultimately overall. So, I mean, I could talk about this, go on and on, but I think it's making sure you are in a space where you have a positive supposition about the other person, that you are not against the work, but you are against the idea of just going along without sort of autopsying something and really looking closely at whether or not it works and makes sense.
You know, so I'm listening to you explain this, and here, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to like snip this out. This is going to be like a little clip on YouTube. The three things I absolutely love, and I'm like listening, and how do I do this too? Like, how do I do this? And so I come into an organization, and immediately, because they're bringing me in, they're like, oh, this guy's the expert, blah, 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 which I don't think this at all. I actually say, like, I'm just someone here sharing ideas, and I'm talking to the experts right now. And so your role is to kind of figure out how what I'm saying makes sense to you and how it applies to your context. And you figure this out. I'm not telling you how to teach. I'm not telling you how to do your job, because that's not my role. But at the end of my talk, and I usually have this space where I really get personalized learning, is I share, I'm like, okay, here's what I need from you. What are your questions? What are your ideas? And what are your challenges? So here's what I'm asking you. Do not challenge me at the end of the day in the parking lot with your friends when I'm not there. Do that in the room. Challenge me here. So because I don't know if I'm right, and I don't know, maybe I said something wrong, maybe I wasn't clear enough, but challenge me in this space. And people are like a little thrown off that I'm like actually outright asking for it. But it's the same thing, is that I want to get better. Like, I want to get better, and I want to make sure. And a lot of those conversations I've had in those have changed things I've done in the future. And I think people appreciate that, because I am open to that as well. But there's another reason I do that too, is I'm trying to model to the administrators, because I know you and I know we never talked about this, but I'm going to bet you'd agree with me. Not all administrators are leaders. And, you know, like, administrator is a role, leader is something that is like you earn that, right? And I'm trying to model to those administrators how important it is to create a space where you can be challenged, even though you are deemed as knowing stuff, I guess. I don't want to say being an expert, but whatever. And so how is there ways that you, maybe like one or two ways that you can create a space where administrators, because I guarantee you someone's listening to this and they're saying, that's awesome, but my admin's not going to be like this. So for the administrators who are listening to this, what do you do to help them create that space where that is? Because the thing I do know about administrators, they want their school to be better. They want to be better. But are they open to that? If you're not, you're not going to get better.
After playing at every level, high school, Division I college, the NBA, international basketball, semi-pro basketball in the CBA, Continental Basketball Association, playing all over the world. And now at 32 years old, after all that, you're failing. Really? What I'm going to do? I'm going to prove to the world that I'm not a failure. And I'm going back to college, and I'm going to overcome this illiteracy, and I'm going to show the world, whole world, that anybody can do this if they put their mind to it and apply themselves to get it done. Don't look for and make excuses. Oh, college costs too much money and all of this and all that to not do the work, to justify within yourself not to do the work. I didn't look for any excuses. I've made 5 vows that I stuck with that caused me to graduate. Never ever skip a class. Sit front and center of every classroom and listen to that instructor and take notes. Mm-hmm. Turn in every single assignment on time and complete and type if you had time to type it. And now they didn't have computers when I was in school. You got no excuse now. And number 3, take every test in every single class on time with the rest of the class. Don't take makeup tests. It's going to be harder to pass the test. You only get 3 tests per semester in each class. You screw up one of them and you're making a D or a C at a minimum. You ain't going to make no A and B. And then the 5th and final thing, never ever leave that university campus until you got that degree high in the air and you're holding it and you're showing it to the world. I did it.
The principal's journey, navigating the path to school leadership. Tell me, like, you know, two things that, you know, have maybe resonated with readers that you see is like really connecting, because this book is something I think is, first of all, I think it's unique. I don't know of a book which is wonderful, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of things you just don't know as you're going into that role, and you can, you know, you know, you kind of are like immersed in it all of a sudden, and you feel like, I don't know what's going on. And so I love that you kind of are building people up to that. So like, what has resonated with the people that have read it, that have connected? Like, what do you think stands out to them?
Yeah, so I think in reading the reviews, I think that people like the fact that it's step by step. I really tried to tell a story. As I was going through my career, I included like checkpoints and important things that I've learned along the way. So there's a lot of personalization there. But also the fact that the readers after every chapter have time and space to reflect and actually answer questions that are related to each chapter that's personalized for them. So it becomes almost like a diary. So right. I think that's a very special part of the book that in the future people can look back and say, wow, these were some of the things I was working on and now they're coming to fruition. So I definitely think that those are the two aspects that I hear the most about, that people like the personalized stories and they like the personalization for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a really important aspect because your journey is your journey and there's things I can learn from it. But, you know, going to a totally different school, you know, like as someone who spent the majority of his life in Canada, probably, being where I was in Canada versus where you are in Maryland is, very different. So it's things I could pick up from you. But ultimately in this, like, I don't know if you've ever picked up Innovator's Mindset. The whole premise of the Innovator's Mindset is like, what do you do with what you know? Don't just say like, hey, Dr. Rachel says this, so I'm going to do this, right?
Right.
You have to kind of still know your community. You have to kind of know where you're at and where you grow. The thing that I thought about when you're explaining your book is, and I always default because she is the best leader I ever had. Her name's Kelly Wilkins. When I applied for my first principalship, I asked her about my resume and how it should look to apply for this. And she said, go find the leadership standards of the district, which she was actually, the superintendent of, and, and then show how you're meeting the standards as a teacher already. So you're like, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm already what you expect of principals. I'm already doing this in my current role. So the way I always
great advice
was, actually like dress to the job you want, not the job you have. That's like how I always kind of thought about that. Yeah. And so like you even mentioned some of the, like the logistical, like even cover letters and things like that. Like, so like, what are like one or two takeaways like of that, of some of that, just kind of getting the job in the first place? Like what do you talk about with the book?
So for the cover letters, I talk about researching the district, knowing what is the vision and mission of the districts that you are applying to. We know that many people may apply to more than one district. So what may be appropriate for one district may not be appropriate for another. So we have to know that. I also talk about making sure your resume is updated. What happens over time is we have all these experiences, but if we're not regularly updating them, we forget about things. And there's probably important things that we're leaving off. So I know for myself, whenever I have a new experience, I take 2 minutes, I open up the resume, I add a bullet point, and then I date it, post-date it, the date of, and then that's it. So I never am like, your resume has to be ready. Yeah. That's what I just say. So if someone asks me today, can you provide an updated resume? Yes, it's right here. I don't have to spend time making it because I've been updating it along the way. Right. So that's part of the advice that I give to the readers.
Connected to the work that I did with Teacher Perseverance is I, interviewed over 40 teachers who were 15 years or more into education consecutively, and I thought they were doing me a favor, right? Like I thought, thank you so much for taking the time during fall of 2020. We all know how that was going. And I just kept saying, thank you. And what was so surprising to me to answer the question was they were the ones thanking me. They were like, thank you for giving us a voice and thank you for letting us share our story. And I didn't expect that because one of the things that came out of it, so there's four themes that came out of their interviews, and they are higher calling, community, the only option, and contextual joy. And those are fleshed out through their narratives, through their, quotes, through their storytelling, all of that. But higher calling is one of them. And I think to the point of toxic positivity, higher calling can have that duality feeling of yes, it's great. I have a higher calling. I have a groundedness in whatever, like spiritual or faith or anything of like why I'm doing this, just some sort of purpose. But people might say teaching is a higher calling. So therefore it's okay that we treat you this way, right? Like, because it's a higher calling. And so we can pay you this, or we can, do these things. And that's not okay, right? There are still boundaries that need to happen where we can make systems better for people. And it can also be a higher calling. I just think it's not a but, like a, it's not a either or, it's just an and, right? It can be a higher calling and we can also treat you better and understand that education needs to be fixed and changed and updated and helped in a lot of ways. But it doesn't just exclude the higher calling from existing. And the fact that we can focus on the positives and the legacy work that teachers have, mm-hmm. and the fact that we really do make a difference in all fields because of the work that educators do. And so it's just the mindset change of not saying it's all good or all positive. I certainly shared some of the struggles of some of the teachers' journeys, including my own. It reads part narrative on my own story. But there is a focus on the positive bend because it is incredible. We get to impact people every single day. And I love that that is ultimately the work we are doing, is being in the business of growing people. And that is, to me, more meaningful than anything else.